Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
All right. That's what it's going to be like for the next few weeks together, trying to figure out how it is that we are designed to live together. Let's just get it all on the table for a minute. Life would be a lot easier, right, if it weren't for some of the people in it. Is that true? I'm not saying it's you. I mean, it might be you. I mean, I'm just saying that that's like kind of true for most of us. And as I've been reflecting on this for quite some time, trying to think about what it is about relationships, you look and say that God has created all these people and he's put us on this planet. There's lots of room in the universe. He could have put us anywhere, but he put us all on one little ball in the middle of that universe or in the edge of the universe, wherever it sits in the universe. And so it seems that he intended for us to live together. So there seems to be some intentionality that we are to work together, to play together, to live together, to do things together. And it sounds really simple. We start teaching this to our kids when they're small, like about how to get along and share and stuff, and it just sort of goes downhill from there. And we don't really get better at relationships. We really get better at pretending we're better at relationships, right? So I want to sort of take some time and try to think about this idea of relationships and what it means, because it's a critical part of not only how we are to get along, but it's a critical part of how we're actually created and wired to be. So that's what I want to address over the next few weeks together. And the way we're going to look at this, it's going to have to do with people and other people and what you want or expect or need from them. And it's going to start to create this, the way I'm going to draw this, it's going to start to create this sort of way in which we live our lives and how love is sort of central or important to that. And all I can do today is to leave you with about 10,000 questions. All right, so don't go, Mike didn't answer all my questions. I'm not. All I'm going to do is just set you up to ask all of them. That's all we're going to do today. And then we're going to see how this unfolds over the next few weeks. The hardest part about starting a series is not to do the whole thing in 1 week. And I can do it. I talk really fast. But I'm going to try to piece this out and do it over the next few weeks together and see how this unfolds as I try to make you like me. So a couple of assumptions that we'll begin with as we start. I always try to, if you've not been here, or if you came to Easter last week and you were offended that I said you probably wouldn't come back, you said, Dadgummit, I'm coming back, so you're here, I'm glad you're here. I always start with some assumptions. These are things that I'm assuming that you believe and are on the same page with, and you may disagree with them, but at least you know where I'm coming from. And so assumption number one is that every human being, everybody wants to succeed. Every human being has something about them that says, I want to do great things, or I want to contribute great things. I want some version of success. And the reason I make that assumption is because I've met a lot of people. I've never heard anyone who just says, I want to be a failure. Okay, so most people, if you kind of assume that they don't want to be failures, most people will sort of want to do great things. I think we can all agree with that, right? We want to do great things. The second assumption is that most people, everybody perhaps, wants to get along. Everybody sort of in their own kind of way wants to get along with other people. And the reason I make that assumption, because I've never heard someone just say to me, hey, Mike, I want to be a jerk. I've heard people say, I am a jerk, and that's just the way I am, but they don't want to be a jerk. They usually want to make some changes to be less jerky than they currently are. And that just leads me to believe that people probably in general would like to get along. You see this in the way people have bumper stickers, right? They always talk about coexist and tolerance and one love and all this other stuff, because there's sort of this default thing about humanity that we long for world peace. It's like every beauty pageant, right? We want world peace because we all know that basically all at our essence would like to get along. And then what happens is something sort of dastardly happens within our worlds. We begin to construct a system in which we can get along. I have my system in which we can get along, and you have your system in which they can get along, and oftentimes they don't always line up, right? So there's a couple of hurdles we got to get under. Now, before we do this, one other thing that you need to know that I assume about you, this is really important for you to understand. This is a principle and a truth. If you can ever get this, it will set you free like very few other things will. So when you hear me really, really clearly, you are crazy. Okay? Like, I know you're thinking I'm talking to someone else. I'm not. I'm talking to you. I'm talking to you and you and you and you and you and you. All you in Studio 3, all you in Leland, all you in New Bern and Jacksonville, everybody, you're all crazy. And the quicker you begin to understand and embrace that, the better you're going to be in this world. We talk about this all the time around here. People show up to church. They come back to church for the first time in a long time, and their biggest thing is, I want to convince everybody that I don't have any issues. If I look good enough, if I sing good enough, if I walk the talk good enough, then no one will know that I have issues. We're going to spend all of our time and energy trying to prevent everybody from knowing that we have issues. And what we've said around here is, don't even spend any time pretending. We know you got issues, and we're going to not spend any time pretending. We're just going to deal with them, right? We know you're crazy. So the sooner you recognize that, the better off you are. Now, I know some of you have worked really hard to prove that principle more true than others, but nevertheless, it's true. All of us have something. And there are some hurdles that come over because it sounds really simple. If I were titling this message, it would be, relationships are simple. Relationships are simple. They really are quite simple when you just break them down and think about what it means for people to just get along and do things together. But something happens in our worlds. Even people who put bumper stickers on their car that long for world peace. What we say is we put the coexist sticker is one of my favorites because it's like all the different religions that don't believe in what the other people believe in. And we sort of think that, man, if they could all just get along, then the whole world would be different. And you're right, right? You're right. And what we're saying is, if those people could just believe anything like I believe anything, then the world would be better. And you create a system. So even people with bumper stickers think the same thing. We all have this. Every human being has this. And what I love about this, because I think what it speaks to is whenever we start talking about this, whether we talk about it in terms of politics, whether we talk about it in terms of sort of sociology and anthropology, whether we talk about it in terms of sort of larger philosophical terms like, you know, coexist or whatever, what we are saying is we want God's vision on human terms. You realize that it was God's vision for oneness, for unity. And that's what we're going to sort of get into and then back our way into how this works with you and I. Now, the problem is, the two hurdles we've got to jump over, and this is why the series is Make You Like Me, because there are a few ways you can think about this. The first hurdle we've got to get over is that most of us, the way we subtly believe that we would all get along better, the way we subtly believe we would all be successful, is that if you would be more like me. We want people to be more like us, right? This is what we do. Because what you want, this is why people, when you drive, you think that people can't drive, and what you mean is you think people can't drive because they don't drive like you. If you're in a hurry and they're driving slow, they're idiots because they're driving too slow. If you're cruising and they're in a hurry, they're an idiot because they're too fast, they're too impatient. And what what's all at the bottom is, you're not like me, so I don't like what you're doing. And that's how most of us live. That's how most of us make all, you know, and everything about getting people to get along is about getting you to think like me. I mean, this is why the political process is a disaster, because everybody thinks that that's what's going to happen, and I'm telling you, it is never going to be that way, ever. We got to somehow give this up on getting people to be like me in order for me to figure out how to relate to them, right? This gets progressively worse. That's way one. The second hurdle is that maybe you're a little bit more, no, you know, I'm not like a dogmatic person. You want people to like you. You want to make people like you. See, one way we want to make people like me, and the other way you want to make people like you. Do you see the difference? You want to be accepted and affirmed and attended and attended to, and you want all these things. You want everybody to get along, and so you just try to go. You don't ever tell anybody the hard truth. You don't ever deal with anything. Everything's just always about peacemaking and making everybody feel nice and doing all this stuff, and because you just need people to like you. And that's not wrong. I mean, I'm a people pleaser, right? I don't want anybody to go, I hate Mike. That doesn't feel good. That's not fun. But I also can't run around trying to figure out, because it does something inside of us that we can't sustain. And worse than that, it does something in the lives of our relationships with other people that our relationships can't sustain. And this is where it all starts to come together. There is a vision for this. This past week was really kind of Easter recovery. Easter was one of the most special weekends I have been a part of at Port City Community Church. I was so excited and enjoyed Easter so much. I was so glad that you guys were being a part of that. We were able to celebrate that together. And so after Saturday, on Monday is usually my day off, and Monday's kind of like a die day, and this Monday was particularly a die day. It was like Easter recovery for a couple of days. It took me a little while longer to recover than I thought. My brain didn't work for a little while after that. And last week also was the mark of a very important event in the history of our world, but particularly our country. On April 4th, this past week, marked the commemoration of the 50-year anniversary since Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination. I don't know if you knew this or not. I hope you did. So over the last few years, I've been reading a lot and studying a lot, entering a lot of conversations about race and racial relations and all the different things that are going on. Listen to all the conversations in our culture, trying to read the Bible and understand, you know, God, what is your kingdom implicate? All these different things, and just having some fantastic conversations, learning a ton. And I've always, you know, I grew up in Atlanta, so I've always had a appreciation of Martin Luther King and in his work. And I don't know that I'd ever sat down and just really like entered into what that was like. Never done that. So last week I sat down at my desk and I began to read and I began to look, and I obviously there were some documentaries and different things on, but I began to look. What I did is I pulled up the pictures of him and his family and him speaking, him right after he was assassinated and all the different, and just began to look at the pictures and kind of let myself feel what was going on. And then I pulled up his speech on the Washington Mall, the I Have a Dream speech, which is one of the greatest speeches ever given. And I watched it from start to finish. And then I pulled the transcript out and I read it from start to finish and just went through every word. And it was amazing because you see the travesty and the injustice that was perpetrated on African Americans and people of color in our country. And you also kind of see how utterly unbelievable it must have been for someone to see a sign that says you can't drink water here or use the bathroom here or eat food here. And also on the flip side, I think that someone would feel that was an okay thing to do to someone else. And all these images begin to come into my mind. And you begin to feel this. And as Martin Luther King kind of, he gets into this speech, right, he starts to talk and he says, I have a dream. And all of a sudden you can see like there's something different than what he was talking about. There's something available on the front, in front of us. And he goes through, and you've heard the speech before, I won't do it, I couldn't do it justice. But one of the phrases that he talks about is not just about can't we all get along. He talks about building on the foundation of brotherhood and sisterhood, of humanity coming together as all of God's children in a way that redefines how we see each other. There's a vision. There's always been a vision. It's God's vision. It's been demonstrated in so many different places. And this is where we have to start to think to ourselves, say, how is it that we understand relationships with other human beings? The reason is because whenever we get to this place, when I can't make you like me, right? If I can't make you think like me, or if I can't get you to like me, if either one of those two things break down, I'm going to work to diminish you and ultimately dismiss you. And in the big categories like racism, that's exactly what happens. When I realize this is an impasse we can't cross, I'm going to now work to diminish your status as a human being and then dismiss your influence in any capacity. We do it in the big issues, and we do it in 1,000 small ways all the time. Every time someone doesn't agree with you or think like you, the first thing you start doing is try to figure out why they're an idiot. And you start making your list. And then, because the quicker you can sort of diminish them as a human being, the quicker you can dismiss them as any regard or influence in your life. And what you're doing is when you're shutting things down. And listen, you've heard me talk about the truth enough that this is not about diminishing truth or any of those things. This is about relationships. Human beings learning how to be human beings the way God has intended us to be human beings. In the Old Testament, this was called shalom. The Jewish religion calls it peace, peace, shalom. It's human flourishing. It's that somehow there's a venture, a co-creation, a stewardship of what we have, a tilling the soil that matters, the work of our hands, and then we do this collectively and together that creates human flourishing on grand scales. The New Testament calls it oneness. It calls it oneness. And this is where I want to start to push and see if we can make some connections and learn a couple things, and then leave you with about 100 questions for next week. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 13. This is why the church is so hard. Because it says this. See, Paul's writing, he says, look, man, here's how this body, these people are going to have to work together and reflect the life and the work of Jesus and his purposes and his intentions in this world. This group of people are going to have to do this together. Now, I tell you what, if our church had four people who thought just like me, this would be really easy. You know that, right? We don't have that. We have a lot of crazy people who've all gathered together trying to figure this out. Here's what he says to us. He says, and I'm the lead crazy. I'm not going to like mislead you. I'm the lead crazy. I'm okay with that. But he says, until we all reach the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, and we become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ, until we all reach, keep back up, say where you were. Not that one right there. There we go. My name is Mike Ashcraft. That was good too. Until we all reach the unity of the faith, until we all reach the unity and the knowledge of the Son of God. Now, guess what I'm going to start to do? As soon as I hear that, until every single person has to, we have to be unified in the faith and unified in our knowledge of our relationship with God and who he is. We got to unify in those things. Here's what I'm going to start doing. I'm going to try to convince you to think like me. Because if I can get you to think like me, guess what? Then we'll achieve the oneness that was talked about. That's not what he's talking about here. There's a process and a progress and a way in which this happens. And that's what I want for us to think about. When Jesus was coming to the end of his life here on earth, right before he was crucified, he had his disciples together for the Lord's, what's now called the Lord's Supper, for Passover. And in John chapter 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17 are his last sort of words with his disciples, with his closest friends and followers. And he's in there, and he washes their feet, and he feeds them, celebrates Passover together. It's a beautiful story. They all have some of my favorite passages. John 15, or John 14, it talks about the fact, he says, you know, let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God and believe also in me. He goes on with that. And John 15, I am the vine and you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. But apart from me, you can do nothing. John 16, the comforter will come. In this world, you will have trouble, but I've left you with peace. And then John 17 is this prayer. And I always try to skip over it. I was going to say, if I'm honest, but I said that, and it's like, if I'm honest, well, why would I not be honest? But you get the idea. But I read these passages, and they don't sit well with me. Because he starts talking about, God, I'm going to be glorified. Father, I'm going to be glorified. I want to glorify my people like you're glorified. And I want for there this to be this unity. And here's how it goes in John chapter 17, verse 20. He goes and he says, I am praying not only... Sorry, like allergies, right? I'm praying not only for these disciples that are gathered in this room, but also for everyone who will ever believe in me through their message. So Jesus is there at this moment, and he's praying for me and for you. He's praying for every person that will ever be impacted by this message that they've been entrusted with. Now, what I would like for him to do is go pray that they'll be rich and famous and fun and waves for days, and here's what he says. I pray they'll all be one. Father, when I think about this, what I pray is that they'll all be one. They'll be unified, just as you and I are one. As you are in me, Father, and I am in you. And may they be in us so that the whole world will believe that you sent me. For I have given them the glory that you gave to me so that they may be one as we are one. Do y'all see a theme here? I am in them and you are in me. May they experience such perfect unity that the world will know that you sent me and that you love them as much as you love me. Here's why I don't know that I like that so much. Because I know how hard it is to get along with people who are hard to get along with. Do you know that? And we kind of cringe. So what we begin to do, we begin to make excuses as to why. Jesus, I know you prayed for oneness, but you don't understand this person. I know you prayed for oneness, but what about that? I know you prayed for oneness, but what about that? I know you long for this, but I don't think it's ever going to happen because of this. And what you and I've got to do is really sort of get gut level honest with ourselves about where we are, where you are, where I am, and decide how it is that we're going to decide to live together in this world. Now, what happens to us? We are born. Humans are born with an antenna, with something that they come out of the womb looking for. As soon as we show up on this earth, we are wet and we are loud and we are naked or naked, depending on where you're from. And we start screaming the moment we enter this world, screaming, demanding that someone take care of us, someone we trust take care of us. And as soon as it happens, these, you know, come out, wah, wah, wah. And someone wraps you up in a blanket, pulls you up, and go, oh, okay, that feels pretty good. I'll do this. And then every time something doesn't go our way, what we do, we cry. We're hungry, wah, wah, wah. We're cold, wah, wah, wah. We're never, wah, wah, wah. Everything is about just making noise and someone takes care of you. And moms and dads do all kinds of crazy. We said, hey, honey, it's going to be okay. Everything's going to be good. Neuroscience teaches us that this is what is called attachment. These little infants, these little human beings are coming out and they are looking. They've got these antennas that are completely almost blank slates in some ways. And every time you say something like, hey, baby, it's going to be okay. Hey, little one, it's going to be okay. Gucci, Gucci, Gucci. Little neurons start to connect in their brain. They start making connections to this face and this person, this expression, this experience. And they start creating a whole world that they can trust or distrust. It's interesting, neurologists believe now that a mom speaking to the baby or singing to the baby in the womb is actually creating a neurological framework that helps that child attach to their mother. So when Julia was pregnant, I got down and said, hey, dad's cool too. I wanted to leave some attachment there. Since you got it, she already thinks dad's cool, right? Because what they believe is kind of interesting, right? Because what happens to us as humans, the same way that God spoke everything into creation, at the sound of his voice, everything came into being. Moms and dads, we speak these affirmations, these constructs into existence by the words that we speak. It's going to be okay. You can be trusted. You can count on me. And you can imagine what happens when this breaks down. Right, we go through something called separation anxiety. You've heard of this, right? If you have kids in grow zone, you know what this is like, because you have to put your kids off into the grow zone. Like, can you please? You just pray your number doesn't come up at all. You're like, please, Lord, just 20 more minutes, right? Because our kids have said, we understand when something is disconnected, something isn't right. We're built for this. Every human being is built for this. And ultimately what this is about, this isn't just about someone to feed me and clothe me and protect me. This is about something more, because we grow. We mature, we become, and this is about intimacy. Now, this is about human intimacy. This is the thing that every human being is built for and wired for, and I need to tell you this because I do. Our culture has exchanged intimacy and sex synonymous, and they are not. They are two different things, so forgive me for being like PG for just a moment. But you need to hear this, because we've got this idea and it is killing relationships all over the place. It's causing high school and middle school students to start participating in things that they're not able to process well because of the demands of intimacy of human beings. Every human being demands intimacy. We're looking for this. And sex is a very quick exchange to bypass all the things that need to happen. And the reason I say this is that sex is not intimacy, although it is an expression of intimacy. And what you've got to decide, and I ask people this, I can't tell you how many times I've had this conversation. I am not afraid of awkward conversations. People ask me, they talk to me about sex, or we're doing this, or and I'll just ask them. And I say, well, tell me what you believe about sex. They're like, well, you know, it's like man and woman, and like, you know, like, no, tell me what you believe about it. Like, what is it? What is it for? And it's usually like crickets, because no one thinks about it. Well, not things that most people think about all the time, but they don't think about it in a way that's constructive. And so there are only two options. Option one, either it is a big deal. It's a big deal. Something needs to be shared between two people in some kind of relationship that matters. Right? It's a big, big deal. And as soon as you start saying it's a big deal, it needs to be shared in the context of love or relationship that matters or whatever you're saying, you are immediately saying this big deal needs boundaries. That's what you're saying. Now, those boundaries may be arbitrary. It may be, well, she was hot, or it may be she's going to stay with me for a while, or we're living together, whatever. But this is what I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to tell you this very clearly. I've done messages on this. Strings Attached is one. Why Bother is another. If you want to talk to your kids about sex, those are two great series for you to let them listen to and talk about it. I do all the kind of uncomfortable stuff for you. But I will tell you this, and this is what I've come to believe, that sex is a big deal. And the only place that is safe enough to contain the power of sex is the covenant of marriage. So I'm going to say that, and you can agree, disagree, but I'm going to tell you that I'm going to stop there. The second option is that sex is no big deal. And then what happens is you sort of reduce it down, you remove all of its beauty and all of its power and all those things, and you begin to use it simply as a means of exchange for you to get pleasure or her to get pleasure, or them to get pleasure, whatever it might be. And it just becomes a way to exchange for you to get something for yourself from someone else. And you know, that is the definition of prostitution, by the way. It's not just money. It's when you take something, you reduce it, and you use it in a way that's not intended to be used in order to get something for yourself simply because you want it. That's the definition of it. So what happens then? So the reason I want you to understand is because I don't want you to get sex and intimacy confused. Intimacy is very, very different. And I'm talking about intimacy. Every single human being longs for this. And we've got, especially in male-female relationships, just a fundamental undermining because we don't ever get to intimacy because we've exchanged sex for it. I'm talking about intimacy. This is good in your marriage. This is good in every other relationship that you will have. So what is intimacy? The basic definition of intimacy is simply this. Intimacy is a shared experience. Intimacy is a shared experience. When I was growing up, I was the middle child. I have an older brother and a younger brother. And I played baseball, T-ball, from when I was 5 and 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, 11, and 12, all the way up. And my mom would say, well, I was the middle child, so she was already getting good at running kids around. She was usually pretty strategic. She could drop us off at baseball practice and then go to the store while we were at practice until I came along. I was like, Mom, you can't go to the store. She said, why not? I said, because I need you to be there. She's like, what do you mean you need me to be there? You're like 8 years old. I said, I know. This one until I was 9, 10. My mom never left me for practice until I was like 11, maybe 14. I'm just kidding, like 11 years old. And she said, I figured I'd never seen a grown man with his mom at baseball practice, so I figured I'd be okay. So she did it for a long time. But here's why. Because every time I did something, guess what I did? Did you see that? I mean, don't our kids do this, right? You see kids do this. On the soccer field, they do this. Every time they do, they kick the ball the wrong way. They turn around and go, did you see that? We are all wired to share something that happens to us with someone that we think cares about us and trusts us. All of us do this. Right, if you love your spouse, when you come home, you tell her about your day or him about your day. That was kind of funny. Yeah, I don't like pick up on that too well. If you love your spouse, you, anyway. So you naturally, human beings are designed to do this. This is really why Facebook and Instagram, all these things have exploded on the scene, because it just reveals the nature of human beings to experience stuff and then to share it, to want other people to see it. The problem is what happens with these virtual places is we start not sharing our experiences, we start sharing the perception of the experiences that we want everybody else to have about us, because we're trying to make people like us. And they can actually do that by tapping your photos and go, oh, I like this, I like this, I like this. I don't like every photograph. And this, Dad, why don't you like that? I said, well, I didn't like it. Like, I don't know you had to like everybody's picture on there. If I don't like it, do I have to like it? Well, yes, you do, because you're making them feel better about themselves. And that's sort of how we wind up living. It's intimacy that is eroded, and we miss the point of intimacy. Intimacy comes from the idea to make familiar the innermost parts of you. That's what it means. It's to make people familiar with the innermost parts of you, and this requires relationships. When someone in the grocery store asks you how you're doing, don't just go, blah, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, do you have people around you? Do you have people around you that know you, that know you? I did a funeral about 10 years ago for a guy, and I was sitting down, and he had played cards with the same group of friends for probably 10 years. And I sat down with his friends in kind of different places, and I asked him, I said, tell me about this guy. I'm like, well, you know, he liked this sports team, and he liked to play cards, and he loved to play golf. I'm going, y'all sat with him every week, and that's all you know about him? You work with someone for 5 or 10 years, and that's all you know about them? Right? Do you see what's happened to us? But we're all looking for this. This is what I'm talking about. What is this for? Do you know? Are you familiar with people? Do you have people around you? The way I wrote this down, there's two things on this list. Number one is you've got to know and be known. You've got to know and be known. Do you know the people around you? Do they know you? What do they know about you? If someone walked up to you and talked to someone who you see every single weekend or every single day at work, or whenever it is, and they said, tell me about so-and-so, would the person they describe be the person that you are? Are you known? The second one is availing ourselves and understanding others. Availing ourselves. And I don't mean forcing yourself or getting people to, we're going to talk more about this next week, but I mean availing yourself, like allowing yourself to be known. Do you bring yourself to the relationships that you have? Or is it some perception that you want them to have of you? I have people in my life that are very close to me that I avail myself to. I don't make them play detective. I don't make them ask questions. I avail myself. As soon as I feel something going wonky in my head or my heart, I go to them and say, hey, this is where I'm at. I want to avail myself because they understand. I want to understand them. It's both. It's intimacy. It's shared experiences. You have to have a sense of self-awareness. You cannot share if you ain't aware. Okay, you can remember it like that. If you're not aware of who you are, what's happening in you, you have no capacity to really give of that to other people. It's intimacy, and it's what every human being is looking for. So how does intimacy happen? Intimacy, just like intimacy, is not sex. Intimacy is not love. But love makes intimacy possible. And the reason is because it's the place that allows the safety for intimacy to exist. Intimacy needs a safe place to exist. As soon as it thinks it's distrusted or it's unconnected or it's being used for something else, question marks occur. And when those question marks occur, we withdraw. That's next week's message. So Jesus comes along in a profound verse. He says this, John 13, 34. A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, or love one another. As I have loved you, so you must also love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. So here's how we're going to finish this up. Some of you are going, oh my gosh, this is going to be done. 2 minutes and 19 seconds. That's what my clock says. So when we think about this, there's this exchange that has to occur for us, if human beings, every human being. We are made to, number one, receive love, or perhaps first receive love. We come out, we're squawking for it. It's the first act. We don't come out going, hey, mom, how can I make your life better? We come out going, please do something for me. I need to receive something. So this then gives way to something that begins to happen. We can all agree that every human being is made to receive love. Even secular neurologists will say this is what attachment is. It's ultimately this thing that has to do with love. The second thing I think it's reasonable to assume is that every human being then is created also to give love, to offer love, to extend love. So we start this cycle, receiving love and giving love and receiving love and giving love and receiving love and giving love. And it sounds really simple. It sounds really simple, right? Except the problem, right? We typically think that people, we receive people's love by them paying attention to us or being nice to us. And the more things we can do to get people to like us or pay attention to us, the more we'll feel like we're receiving love. And it's not, it's something else. We're looking for this idea of intimacy, this shared experience, this connectedness. It's not because people like you. It's not because people think like you or believe like you or are just like you. There's something else going on. I begin to think about this, and it looks so easily, but love is ultimately given and received. This exchange happens between other people. It happens within the context of relationships. So I begin to ask myself a question. What then is a relationship and why is it for? God seems to have put us here together. As much as I want to move to St. John and make hammocks, he seems to have called or created us to live in proximity to each other. And so I ask you the same question I'd ask myself. Do you have a definition of relationship or relationships? If I said, what are your relationships? You say, well, they're just people in my life. Well, relationships aren't people in your life. Relationships are the thing that exists between people. So here's our working definition for the next few weeks. Relationships are the framework through which love is expressed and experienced. Relationships become the framework through which love is expressed and experienced, right? Can we all kind of get our brains around that for just a few minutes? Every person that you interact with, every relationship that you have is a way for you to experience love, and sometimes you're like crying and demanding it. And other times you feel like you're just like all the time giving it, but it's not helping you, but there's still some exchange, something that has to happen in us. And so I begin to think about what is love, because I've tried to be really careful not to use it as a verb. Love other people. Jesus said that, but I'm trying to say when Jesus said to love others, he's saying give love to other people as I have given love to you. I'm trying to use it as something. To receive love means I get something. To give love means I give something. To give love is to give of ourselves for the good of another person. To give of myself for the good of another person without demanding anything from them. And to receive love is to receive good for myself without trying to earn it. And you're going to have to kind of nuance that, because as soon as you start to think, I'm going to talk more about this, as soon as you start to think on that, you start to realize we've got to break these cycles of manipulation to understand something different that's there. And when I think about what does it mean to give love or to receive love, the way I've written this out, we're going to talk more about this, is that love is a force. It's a force that breathes worth and value into another. So if we start thinking about it in this way, it starts to help us get a frame of how we're going to begin to exchange this. And it sounds really simple. It sounds really simple, right? We receive love, we give love. It's a force that breathes value and worth in other people into another person. And you all have a picture in your head of a person who's just easy for that to happen to. Right? This is a piece of cake. And if it's so simple, why in the heck are we so messed up and broken and distant from each other? You don't know why? I'm going to tell you next week. Here's the homework, real quick before we go. Here's the homework. Two things. I want you to ask two questions to yourself, and I hope that you'll do this. Question number one is, how well are you known? How well are you known? Like, who knows you? Like, you need to have a name in that blank. Who knows you? Guys, men, males, this is especially important for you. It's especially important for you. I see men collapse all the time. The weight of the world on their shoulders. And nobody knew. Who knows you? It is imperative. Number two, how well do you avail yourself to others? How walled off are you? How open are you? How are you? And here's how I tell you to find the answer to that out. Get someone close to you, not your spouse probably. Get someone who works with you, who works closely with you, who's sort of seen you, and just say, hey, listen, I'm gonna have a really awkward conversation with you. It's about sex. I'm just kidding. And then that'll get all the awkwardness out of the way. They'll be like, oh, whatever you're gonna ask now is gonna be fine. So you say, how hard do you have to work to know me? And they're gonna go, oh, you know, you're pretty cool. Like, no, I don't want like the cool, not cool. I want you to think about it, and I want you to be able to tell me how well do you think you know me, and how available do you feel like I don't mean time-wise, I mean avail, like how much you allow yourself to be seen by other people. If you get the answer to those two questions, the series is going to be a breeze. And you will be free from ever trying to make you like me or whatever version that you use. All right, fair enough? Let's pray. God, thank you. Thank you. Thank you that you have created a way for us to live that is far beyond what we tend to think. That this isn't just about us getting along. It's about a vision that you have for us fully bearing your image, where every tribe and tongue and nation sort of are gathered and in what you have said is perfect perfect unity. God, in my prayers that we would, love would manifest itself in patience and kindness and not envious and all these other ways, that we would forbear with each other until we all attain this place, this thing, this way, that your image might be more completely seen in our body and therefore in our world. And God, that's my hope and that's my prayer. And I ask this in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.